From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Strong, sexy, independent, and relentless are words often used to describe fashion designer Dionne von Furstenberg. But in her new memoir, The Woman I Wanted to Be, it's clear von Furstenberg's life has had as many falls as climbs. We'll talk with von Furstenberg about creating her famous wrap dress in the 70s, her business missteps, and the effect her Holocaust-surviving mother had on her. And we'll learn how this Belgian-born designer became an American fashion powerhouse. That's next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Love is love, are the words fashion designer Dionne von Furstenberg lives by in her new memoir, The Woman I Wanted to Be. It's clear that motto has guided her well, from building an empire from scratch with a simple, sexy wrap dress, to seeing that empire sink, to pulling off one of fashion's greatest comebacks. Dionne von Furstenberg shares how loving herself helped her become the icon of female power she is today. Dionne von Furstenberg, thank you so much for joining us in studio today.
What an introduction. Very nice.
Thanks. I have to admit, before I picked up your book, I didn't think I would be able to relate to your glamorous life. But your story is a very human story of triumph and pain. You married and divorced a prince. You saw your fashion business rise and fall. You're a cancer survivor, and you were never supposed to be born because it was dangerous for your mother to have children soon after surviving the camps in Auschwitz.
That's a lot, right? It is a lot in one life.
And I was really moved when you described, you really started the book with your mother's experience.
Yes, yes.
And you know, one of the more gripping moments in the book was when you described how she just happened to be pulled from the line of people that was heading to the gas chambers.
Right. Well, yes, my mother was 22 when she was arrested, and she was sent to the camps. And she stayed there for 13 months. And, I mean, first Auschwitz and then Ravensbrück and then Neustadt Castle. She weighed 49 pounds when she was found. She wasn't supposed to be alive. I mean, she weighed less than her bones are supposed to weigh. And she got home, and her parents welcomed her, and her mother fed her little by little. 6 months later, her fiancé came back, and he came back, and then they got married. And the doctor said that she should not have a child for a few years because her body couldn't take it and because the child would probably not be normal. And sure enough, I was born 9 months later. So my birth was a miracle. And I kind of, in a sense, I had won before I started. And so I wanted to tell my mother's story. And when I started to get into it and find, because my mother passed away 14 years ago, and I started to find all this information, and the Holocaust Museum did a lot of research, which they sent me, and I found letters, and I found a little note that she had written. She always told me that when she was in the truck, she wrote a little note and threw it on the street, hoping that, you know, somebody would send it to her parents. And I say, yeah, you know, when your mother says things. And later, after she died, and I don't think she knew that the note existed. I don't think she knew that her older sister had the note and had kept it. I don't think she knew that. But after she died, my cousin gave me a whole bunch of photos that he found in his own mother's things. And amongst those photographs was this envelope, and it said Lily 1944, and I found the note, and in the note she says, "I don't know where I'm going, but I want you to know to her parents that I'm leaving for with a smile."
Yes, it was so important for her not to show her fear to her parents. And I thought it was so interesting that you started your story with her story, because it feels like that experience and this notion that fear is not an option has really been foundational in your life.
Yes, yes. I mean, going into my mother's story explains everything about me and explains why I had always such a need for freedom and need for independence, and because my mother told me no matter what, you can never be a victim and fear is not an option. And all of those things really made me the woman I wanted to be and the woman I became.
And that freedom is also something that you feel like is a big part of the design that really launched you, which was this jersey wrap dress. What is it about it, do you think? What do you think it conveys that has made it so enduring for so long,
you know,
for 40 years?
You know, I don't know. I mean, did I ever think that that one dress would last for so many generations, for four decades? No. And I realized, like, when I did an exhibition this year in January in Los Angeles at LACMA, a big exhibition where I celebrated the 40th anniversary of the dress. And when I did that, I looked at it in a completely different way. And I also brought in a young designer to curate it and make new ones. And so I realized for the first time, really, that that dress has lasted for so long, but can last forever, because it's so, you can make it in so many ways, you know. And even if big puffy shoulder pad would come back, you could still have a wrap dress.
And interestingly, you know, this, you hesitated to call yourself a designer for so long.
Yes, because I went in, I didn't go into design like, oh, you know, I wanted to be a designer and I go to fashion school. I did not know. I mean, I did not know, you know, I did not know what I wanted to do, but I knew the kind of woman I wanted to be, and I wanted to be an independent woman, and then a door opened, and it was meeting this Italian industrialist in the fashion business who had a printing plant and who taught me everything about printing, and then he invented this jersey, and I learned everything about knitting jersey, and then, you know, all of these things I learned from him. And then I came to America for a visit, to visit my boyfriend. And then I discovered New York and a whole new way of selling clothes, and that it was in Europe. And then when I went back to the factories, I thought, you know what? Maybe I should make few samples and try to sell them in America. And so I went into this whole, by accident. And then I came to America. And then Diana Vreeland, who was the editor of Vogue, loved it. She thought it was so genius. Nobody else saw anything genius about that. I mean, they were just nothing little dresses. And but she was right. She saw it before anybody else. And then I lived an American dream. So it's, and that's why also, you see, I'm always so interested in very young girls, and that's even with my TV show, to right. mentor very young girls, because at that moment of your life, when you are somewhere, you know, in your very early 20s, what is the door that is going to be your door? What is the path that is going to be your path to become, hopefully, the woman you want to be?
And so why did you decide that this was a good time to do a reality show, specifically on this aspect of trying to find a brand ambassador? And I should actually say that your show is on E! And it's called House of DVF.
Exactly. And, well, it's, you know, I'm always interested in the young generation, right? Because strangely enough, every time, it's the young generation that bring their mother back to DVF, you know? So it's, I'm always interested, and I love, my mission in life is to empower women, right? I do it with my little dresses, and I do it with, you know, making their life you know, making them feel more beautiful and sexy and confident. I do it through mentoring and I do it through philanthropy. So mentoring, you know, I go to university and I speak to young girls and all of that. But I thought to do that, to use the TV show, a TV show which, right, you know, a lot of those TV shows objectify the women. And I hate that. And they make the girls think, oh, if you're bitchy, you succeed, and, you know, and fake tits will make you happy, and all of that. And I very much go against that. So I thought for me to do a TV show, bring in 8 young girls, and bring them in the company, make them understand all the different facets of the company, from design to merchandising to retail to marketing, and training them and hoping that one of them can become a brand ambassador and can travel the world. I thought that was a good way to be informative, to be fun, to be glamorous, but at the same time to pass some empowering messages, which is what is important to me.
And as you said, you really like to empower young girls and also even your customers. We actually have a clip from your show that I'd like to play. Again, this is from House of DVF, Dion von Furstenberg's show on E!
On Sunday night. There's something very special that happens when I am in a store and I'm wrapping a dress on a lady.
You see this adorable little dress?
Oh, I'm going to try this on.
I immediately understand what would look good on her.
Oh, and then wait. There's one more thing that you should try is this one. Look, this one.
And in a minute, I can make her confident. That is the magic of the personal appearances.
Come.
I knew.
The word, right?
I knew.
Thank you for bringing this out. I'm so excited.
Wear it in good health.
I did a lot of personal appearances, and oh my God, so many. Here, I remember, especially in San Francisco, I remember coming here to iMagnin. I did so many. And it's so interesting because I was very young when I started. I was 25, and my partner, the salesman, who was my partner at the time, just pushed me out there and sent me everywhere. And I didn't know where I was going. I was discovering this country, and I was discovering myself. And as I was discovering myself, I was helping other women to discover themselves. So I had this dialogue develop very, very early. And also when you do personal appearance and you meet your consumers and everything, you know what is right and what is wrong. It's just so useful. But
how do you sell confidence? You've said before that what DVF sells is confidence. And what did you mean by that?
Well, I didn't know. I mean, I was selling confidence. Now I can say that. But I was, because that dress and my dresses in general are very flattering. They are comfortable. They are effortless. But they have all the little details of old-fashioned dressmaking that enhance the right part. And so they are both proper and sexy at the same time. And I joke because someone once told me, and I quote them all the time, that it's the dress that you get the guy in and his mother doesn't mind.
We're talking with fashion designer and icon Dion von Furstenberg. Her new memoir is The Woman I Wanted to Be, and she's also author of the book Journey of a Dress. She also mentors aspiring designers on her reality television show on E! On Sundays called House of DVF. You know, one of the things that I found interesting is how seductiveness, sexiness has been a really big part of your persona. And I wonder, one thing that struck me about you is how you seem to be able to do that without becoming an object. I think many young women aspire to be sexy, but in a way end up becoming objectified.
Well, because I think to be, first of all, I prefer seductive than sexy.
Why?
Because seductive brings you in. Sexy seems more aggressive. Right? And maybe it's the X. So I think that it's nice to be seductive, but you could be seductive even, you know, seductive that is not necessarily just with beauty. It's with brain. It's with heart. I mean, who was more seductive than Mother Teresa, you know, or Nelson Mandela? So is to bring you in to. What was the question again?
Well, it was just more how you've been able to make
yes,
your
but
seductiveness
I do not
a power.
Think that woman is an object. That's for sure, and certainly, as long as it's in your hand, is okay, but not in someone else's hand. And so, you know, it's okay to be attractive, but you realize that the best way to be attractive is really to be yourself, the best of yourself, clearly, but to be yourself, because it is personality that really counts. And my book, which is in two parts, the first part is The Woman I Am, and the second part is Business Fashion. In the Woman I Am, the first part is the roots, then is love, and then is beauty. And that chapter of beauty, I talk of every facets of beauty, you know, which is, you know, all the models that I use, but also how much personality is really what beauty is, and confidence. And confidence is the most becoming thing. And you're just compelled. Even, you know, so, and I know there are a lot of really beautiful women who are not confident. So it's just a matter, at the end, it's all about the relationship you have with yourself. And that is what you must work on every single day of your life.
And is that why you've resisted getting any kind of plastic surgery? That's so appearance
focused. Yeah, I decided, you know, it's not like I never thought about it, and I went to see doctors, and then they told me all these things, and then I was afraid of losing myself, and so I decided not to, and now, you know, I'm getting older, and I see pictures of myself, I say, wow, but it is who I am, and at the end, even when I feel right now I'm really tired, I've gone on the road, but you just say, okay, you know what, go for it, because I remember actually when I was very very young, and you know, having my picture taken and hating myself, and now I look back and I say, what was I hating myself for? I look great. So you just have to go with it and make the best and smile a lot.
I even read that when you were a little girl, you tried to put scratches on your face to make wrinkles.
I did. Around here, because I would love Jeanne Moreau. Yes. But it's funny. I didn't like to be fresh. And you don't like to be fresh until you're no longer fresh. And then all of a sudden you realize being fresh is good.
But what do you think wrinkles signify?
Wrinkles are the maps of your life. They really are. If you smile a lot, you have wrinkles that show smile. If you know, it's they are the traces and the roads of your life.
We're talking with Dionne von Furstenberg about her new memoir, The Woman I Wanted to Be. What would you like to ask her about life, her vision, her style, beauty, love? Give us a call and join the discussion at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions to her or comments to forum@kqed.org. Post them on our website at kqed.org/forum. Post them on Facebook or tweet us. We're at KQED Forum. And, you know, one of the things that I was just also wanted to talk with you about was just the business of fashion and the intensity of that business and how you rose, then fell, and then found the courage to come back and try to rise again. What do you think drove that comeback for you?
Well, the first era of my business was American Dream. I was 25 years old, and it just all happened so fast.
You were raising two kids at the time.
And so. I was raising two kids. It was really fast. So it was wild. It was extraordinary. It was exhilarating, but it was really fast. And it was very fast. And I basically sold my business 15 years later. And I thought I was finished. And I mean, I had lots of ups and downs during that, but And then the goal then, the first goal was to be independent, which I became. Then when I started again 15 years ago, my goal then was different. It was because I had kind of lost my own identity, because I realized that my business and my brand was so much part of my identity, and the brand had basically disappeared. So that was really tough. And so I started again because I saw that young girls were buying old dresses in vintage shops. So I started again. And the motivation then really was about showing myself and the world that it wasn't an accident the first time around. And I wasn't sure. I was not sure at all that it hadn't been an accident. I had to prove myself, and I did. And we grow very fast again and organically. And then now is the new era. Now I realize that I had a success again, that my brand is global, it's all around the world, that if it lasted that long, it probably can last longer and after me. And it's all about carving into the DNA, going back on brand, because 2 years ago I kind of went off brand, and going back on brand and making sure that all the things that it stands for are respected and go on.
I think it's interesting that you say that you wanted to prove to yourself that the first time essentially wasn't a fluke. It feels like this question of legitimacy has sort of pervaded your life in some way.
But I think it's normal to question yourself. And I do. I question myself all the time. And I mean, I think that's kept me human. But I must say that seeing that exhibition in Los Angeles in January.
This past January.
And actually, that's the other book, the Rizzoli Coffee Table book called
The Journey of a Dress.
And also my memoir ends at the day of the exhibition. So that exhibition was extremely milestone for me. It was the body of my work. It's what I did. And I was very proud of it, and I am very proud of it. And right,
you described it as the first time you felt totally legitimate.
Yes, yes, yes.
We'll continue our conversation with Dionne von Furstenberg. Her new memoir is The Woman I Wanted to Be, and she's also author of the book Journey of a Dress. What would you like to ask Dionne von Furstenberg? Give us a call and join the discussion. That's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email your questions to forum@kqed.org. Post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Or you can also post your questions on Facebook or tweet us. We're at KQED Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Do stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're spending the hour with fashion designer and icon Dionne von Furstenberg. Her new memoir is The Woman I Wanted to Be. She also mentors aspiring designers on her reality television show on E! Called House of DVF. Let's hear what our listeners have to say, and let's go to Mary in Castro Valley. Hi, Mary.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to tell you I love your show. My daughter and I watch it together, and there's not too many things you can watch anymore with your daughter, so we love your show. It's so inspiring. And I wanted to know ways I can instill confidence in my daughter. She's 10 and tends to compare herself, you know, to others and think that they do things better. So I just want to instill that she has her own gifts.
All right. So I think you should tell your daughter that she's not the only one to think that. You know, I always say that everybody wants to be the woman across the room, because the woman across the room, she looks so together and she looks like she's perfect. But she actually looks at you as the woman across the room. So I think that everybody feels that. And the best way for your daughter is to know that she has to be true to herself, and she has to be, you know, demanding on herself and make sure that she is the best she can be. But once she is that, she should like herself, because the relationship she has with her, she is her best friend, and she has to believe that.
Thanks so much for the call, Mary. I think we have a similar question from Terry in San Francisco. Hi, Terry.
Yes, hi. I have a similar question for my 10-year-old. But to add to it, how do you guide her to maintain her confidence? You know, you tell her she's beautiful, she's dynamic, but sometimes she feels the comparison with other children and other girls, taller, prettier. You know, how do you maintain that confidence?
It's listen, you know, girls are girls, and it's you just it's not you just have to say to you have to work on their personality. I think you have to work on their personality and on their substance, and you are who you know. It's not just the beauty, because beauty comes and goes, but it's your heart. It's that you're responsible, that you're good at school, that you do the best you can. I think that is what is more important.
Terry, thanks so much. How did you do that with your own daughter? You have a daughter, Tatiana.
Well, you know, it turns, I mean, my daughter was so beautiful as a little girl, and now I realize she didn't feel it, you know. So it is. But then I was also, I didn't think I was beautiful. I looked so different than any other girl in Belgium, you know, with my curly hair. But, you know, I made the best of it, and I decided, okay, I it was my personality, and then that's what happened.
Yeah, it sounds like in reading your book that later in your life you realized that the definition of beauty expanded far beyond appearance to being much more about who you are, and then that.
That's right. That's right.
Sort of defined. You know, we're also getting some emails. Terry writes, I had to pull my car off the road to tell you how your wrap dress empowered my niece. Both my niece and I are size 16. My niece had been unemployed for at least 2 years when she finally got a job. I gave her a jersey wrap dress I had bought for myself at a thrift store. She wore that dress at her new job and got so many compliments, and it boosted her battered confidence. I told her she had you to thank. The jersey wrap dress is a gift of confidence for women of all sizes. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Regina tweets, where did the swan logo come from? From 1970 to 75, I explored New York City with a self-designed embroidered swan on my jeans hip.
Swan was not Diane von Furstenberg. That is Gloria Vanderbilt.
Okay. And another listener asks, why did Diane von Furstenberg decide to do a reality show, and would she do it again?
Well, we talked about that before, and I wanted to bring in young girls, and I wanted to train them in order for one maybe to become a brand ambassador, but also because I wanted to get into that form, into that genre of television, and yet instill empowering messages and not objectify the girls.
This listener also asks what your favorite thing that isn't fashion related is, your favorite place in the world to visit, a favorite book.
I am a hiker. I love nature more than anything. I am a big hiker. I love to hike. Tonight I'm going very far away. I'm going to Indonesia with my family. I love to explore new places. I love to get lost in nature, and that's where I get my strength.
And where did you get your free spirit? You talked a little bit about being alone a lot as a child. Was that part of what gave you the strength?
What do you mean by free spirit?
Well, I mean just, you know, being able to travel
adventure.
On a moment's notice. Yeah, yeah. To be adventurous.
Yeah. I don't know, curiosity. I am very curious, and I'm always ready to go. I always want to go. You know, some people have the anxiety to go. I have the urge to go.
And you also described yourself as living a man's life in a woman's body.
That was my fantasy. Yes, that was my fantasy. I wanted to be able to have a man's life in a woman's body, which means I wanted to feel like I could pay my bills. I could feel that I could be free and yet stay a woman.
And let's go to more of our calls here. We have Zach in San Francisco. Hi, Zach.
Hi, Nina. Thank you for taking my call. Ms. von Furstenberg, my question for you is, did your husband, multi-billionaire Barry Diller, help you revive your business empire? And if so, how?
My husband, Barry Diller, who wasn't my husband then, has been the most loyal and supportive person in my life. He had many roles. He was my lover, then he was my friend, and now he's my husband. And he's been amazingly supportive, mostly with his love, Yeah.
Zach, thanks for the call. Yes, and also it sounds like, you know, you have also had the guidance of your own son in terms of on financial matters. You talked about yourself as very impulsive. And so
yes,
needing to have somebody to...
Yes, yes. My son is, he's my son. So we're very much alike. And he, you know, he watches the finance of the company and my own. And he's very pragmatic and he's very protective of me. So, you know, I rely on him a lot.
Yes. And I guess one of the things I wonder is, you mentioned in your book that your one regret was whether or not you spent enough time with your children when they were kids. Do you still?
No. My big regret is, it's not that I'm spending the time with my children. But my regret was that I didn't realize that my daughter had a disability. She has a muscular disease, and we took her to, you know, orthopedist because she couldn't, and so that is the big regret of my life. But I was there for my kids. I really was.
You know, you talk about this book. You said you really put your soul into it. Was there anything that you left out?
Oh, I'm sure there's things that I left out. I don't know, but I wrote this book with my soul, and I opened myself to, and I went through the most, what I remember being the most important and the most crucial moments of my life, and the people who had the biggest role in my life. So I'm sure I forgot things, but when I read it, because I also did the audio, and when I actually read the whole thing, 14 hours, I was actually satisfied with the way I wrote it.
We're getting a lot of questions actually also related to fashion. A listener writes, my mom wore your dresses in the 1970s. What distinguishes a DVF of that era from a DVF today?
Well, it's funny because I just reissued the original wrap dress called the T72. I just reissued it because it just feels so right again. And but yet I also created many anniversary dresses. With one, for example, the Emilia or the Jewel, which has a knitted top, I mean a jersey top, and a woven skirt, and the skirt is wider, and so that's a very different style. We have some jumpsuit. We brought back the jumpsuit, and this time we also did a romper, which young girls love. So it's endless what can be done with a wrap dress.
And I have to ask you, what do you see as the next trend?
I don't know. I mean, you know, when I am so much into the work that, and I work 6 months in advance, 9 months in advance and everything. So I can't even, you know, it's details.
Stephanie asks, does Ms. von Furstenberg have any advice for building a timeless wardrobe on a budget?
Well, for sure, wrap dress. My dresses are a good investment because they don't seem to go down, and people sell them on eBay for the same price, if not more, what they paid it for.
And another listener asked, what's your perspective on feminism and the lean-in movement? You know, the Sheryl Sandberg lean-in movement.
I am a feminist with many, many M's because I think you could be a feminist and be feminine. I think that I hate the idea that a lot of young girls don't like the word feminist because I don't know why. I believe that to be a woman is great. It's an event. I mean, I was raised as it was an advantage, and I've always taken that as such. I know, however, that there's a lot of inequalities in jobs and in opportunities. But I think that us as women, the only way to deal with it is dealing with the positivity and not say, oh, we don't do that. Oh, not whine, but just show our substance and show our strength. And then we win.
On another fashion-related question, pattern mixing seems very in right now. Do you have tips for people on doing this well?
Well, you could do it well and you could do it not well.
It feels like it's easy to do not well.
Yeah, but if you just look at nature. Look at nature. Look at flowers. You have pattern mixing in nature. You have color mixing in nature. So for me, it's always inspired by nature.
It feels like what is old always becomes new again in fashion, like something is recycled every 10 to 20 years or so. And I'm wondering why that is. I mean, is the market not prodding designers to make something totally new, you know?
You know,
like flares are out, then flares are back.
Yes, but this is like food. It's like food. After you eat a lot of salt, you need sugar. After you have a lot of sugar, you need pungent. You know, it's the same thing. It's fashion is not just something that's you know, done by designers. Fashion is mysterious things that happen. All of a sudden, girls wear combat boots, and then designers make boots like that. You know, it's the air du temps. It's the air of the moment.
And let's go to more of your calls. Let's go to Jamie in Lodi. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
Okay, so my question, Diane, you do such a great job creating dresses that are really beautiful and yet exude a lot of confidence. They're like whimsical, feminine, and still very, very confident. And you were talking about earlier about how confidence is beauty. And so I was wondering, in your designs, what you're looking for and what to get that confidence across in these clothes.
Well, first of all, as I said, what I tell my designers, everything has to be effortless and it has to be practical. DVF is about the friend in the closet. You wake up in the morning, your eyes are swollen, you don't feel good. Oh, God, where am I going? What do I wear? We are supposed to be solution-driven. That's how we design. We take fabric that feel great, fabrics that feel good on the skin, fabrics that don't wrinkle. I mean, you know, we make cuts that are comfortable. I mean, all of these things, which really you find very much in women designers. You always find more comfort in women designers than in men designers, and that's because they wear the clothes.
Does that answer your question, Jean?
What?
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. You know, one thing I feel like I need to ask you since we're in the Bay Area is you collaborated with Google to help them design Google Glass, right?
Well, at first it was, as I tell in the book, first it was I showed Google Glass for the first time ever anywhere on one of my catwalk. And that happened by accident because I'm friendly with Sergey, and it just happened.
It just happened.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, we did a collaboration, and I'm sure we'll do more collaboration. And I am, even though, you know, I'm older, I'm crazy about tech, and I love tech, and I am so happy that I was young enough to be part of the digital revolution.
So can I get your thoughts on how those glasses have sparked some anger and protest here in the Bay
Sure.
Area? Wearers have called Google Glass wearers glass holes, actually. So I'm wondering what you think of the way some Google Glass wearers have been shunned here.
Such as what?
So, for example, it sparked anger over, say, invasions of privacy, glassware have had them ripped off their faces.
Yes. Well, listen, you know, I mean, we have no privacy anymore. Everybody has a cell phone. I mean, it's, you know, we live in a world that, I mean, you take a picture, you send it out. I mean, they get it all over. That's all an adjustment, and I do understand some of it, and we all have to be aware of it and whatever. I mean, I don't know that there is any privacy anymore.
You know, One of the things that you've been saying throughout our conversation is that you have a mission to empower women. But I wonder if you could say specifically what you think women most need to feel empowered to do.
What?
What women need to feel most empowered to do. Is it to work? I mean, it sounded
I think it's very important for women to have children, whether you have them or you adopt them. I think it's part of who we are. But I also think it's extremely important for women to have an identity outside the home. I really do. I absolutely do. So it's a lot of work, but that's what it is.
And what does that do for them? What is the work, the importance of being
able to... It gives you an identity. It's the identity. I think it's important for a woman to have an identity outside the home, not just the wife and the mother, because the children go and the woman needs to feel like she is a person outside of her home.
And Patricia actually writes, love your message of being your authentic self. So much pressure to be something else. I love my authentic self. However, I am having trouble crafting a path for myself. I've been home with my kids and their struggles with school have consumed me. How do you put yourself into a frame of mind to craft and launch yourself when your life has been consumed with others?
I know. And that's, again, it goes back to what I said before. It is important to have a relationship with yourself. So find one thing to do that is outside the home. And again, it could be charity. And that again, and you don't have to, and also consumed by others. You know, you have to do it for others, but because it makes you happy. I think you have to respect yourself, or go and exercise, or go and walk, or do some yoga. Do something for yourself.
Nico writes, you're an inspiration. I have a scientific job now, but making and designing clothes on the weekend is what keeps me going. Is it too late for me to start a new career? And actually, Chandrika writes something similar. My daughter is 20 and wants very much to go into the field of fashion, promotion, philanthropy, but could use some suggestions for how to start, study or work or both. Do you have any advice for
I think it's always good to study, to find out what you are interested in and then what you are good in. I think it's great also to go try to get internship and try to find, you know, and then find that first door that will help you.
Is it ever too late to start, as Nico asks?
I think it's never too late to do anything. As long as there is you're alive, you're fine.
You know, you've written a lot about how you're at the stage of a new era in your life and that you're planning for a time after you. And in your book, you talk about how you willingly show people the spot you plan to be buried.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you see death?
Well, I mean, you know, for me, it's not a new thing. I was always, because we know that death is the destination. You know, life is a journey and we all go to death. I mean, that is it. So it depends, you know, hopefully you go the long, you know, in a long time. But so I've always, and I don't like surprises. So I've always thought about death every day of my life, I think. And as a part of something that will eventually happen. And now, of course, I didn't think that I was ever going to be 30 and then 40 and then 50 and then, you know, and then that I would see my children grow up and then that I would have grandchildren and then it happens. And then you start looking back and that's life. Life is a journey. And so I try to be good and do good work.
And so you think about it just as part of the...
It's part of who we are.
And did your experience with cancer, did that play any role also in the way that you see
death? Well, I think everyone that was told at some point you have cancer will never forget that time and will always be aware of that. Now, that is now 20 years ago, so it's not quite as present inside me as it was, you know, before. But it does, and a lot of people will tell you that somehow that experience was also enriching. And it enriches you because, again, you have more sense of the texture of life. You appreciate it more and you appreciate. I was never really that compassionate about people in, you know, physical pain. And I became more compassionate.
And does that lead to, that also plays a role in your involvement in Vital Voices?
Yeah, Vital Voices is something else. That's more about empowering women. I was always about empowering women. But what the disease did, it made me more compassionate. And I also understood more, you know, my fragility and my strength.
What are the challenges of being a female executive today?
Oh, I don't know. I am not an executive. I don't think I am an executive. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a designer. I created a brand. But I'm not an executive, and I think it would be a very bad one.
You think you would be very bad. In some ways, it sounds like it was when you were able to just focus on the things that you love to do and the things where you feel passionate and hand off sort of the more executive duties that you really flourished.
Yes, yes. I think that's true.
Let's go to more of our calls. Let's go to Rick in San Francisco. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all good, please.
Oh, good. Hi, Dion. How are you?
Hello.
How are you? Your memoir is beautiful, by the way. I just want to let you know that I used to be friends with Egon when he lived in Milan and worked there. And I was, we went on a trip to Switzerland one time, and he spoke so well about you and how he loved you and what a wonderful person you were and how talented you are. I just want to let you know that.
Thank you. We were very close.
And that's Egon von Furstenberg.
That was my first husband and, even more important, the father of my children.
Thanks, Rick, for the call. Sarah asks, who were the designers, if any, that inspired you at the beginning of your career? And are there designers that could you just inspire?
All right. So I was very inspired by, well, Yves Saint Laurent was, you know, what I grew up with. But I was very inspired by Giorgio Santangelo, by Stephen Burrows, by Holston, by all these young designers when I first came to New York in the 70s. They are the one. Oh, Pucci. I was very inspired by Pucci, too. So I was very inspired by all of them.
And anyone today?
Today, I am the president of the CFDA, so I'm the mother of all designers, so I cannot show any preference to
That's
anyone.
The Council of Fashion Designers of America.
That's right.
You know, another listener asks, what current fashion trends just make you cringe?
Oh, I don't know. What makes me cringe always is when people are forced and fake. I guess that what I hate the most is fake. And I don't like when women are objectified. I like when women are honored and glorified.
You know, I was talking a little bit earlier with you about legacy, and I read that you and your husband are helping New York build a public park and a performance venue.
We just announced that we are taking over a pier on the West Side, on the West Side Highway. It used to be called Pier 54. It will now be Pier 55, and we're making it to a park. And in that park, they will be open performance spaces.
And that's part of a legacy you want to leave.
Yes, my husband is very much into public spaces. He loves to he loves parks. And we were very involved in the High Line, which is also a park. It was there was this elevated railroad that was going to be destroyed, and that runs from Ganzevoort all the way to 30th Street. And two guys had the dream of turning it into a park, like a big, long, green ribbon. And we made it happen. And so that was really fun.
And you're 67 now, is that right? And you've said that you're working harder now than you've ever worked. So what's on the horizon for
DV? But hopefully I will stop as my son told me this morning, you're crazy. So
what did he mean by that?
Well, because I am crazy. My schedule is, this year was so big for me because I really wanted, you know, there was the exhibition and then there was finishing the memoir and then the coffee table book and then the TV show and all of that. So it was a big, big, big year. And so I'll be happy when it's over. And it's over on my birthday because I'm born on New Year's Eve.
Oh, that's right, December 31st. You know, Amy writes, thank you for letting the world see what an inspiring role model you are. I'm raising two daughters and trying to teach them what is really important in this world of senseless distractions. My grandmother always told me, if you want to be treated like a lady, you have to act like one. I find myself repeating it to them. I'll be buying your book for my 15-year-old this Christmas. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Thank you very much. That's so sweet. I mean, I'm, you know, I have to say that the reception of the book has been amazing, and I'm so glad because I do feel so raw and so open, you know. I was so honest and I was so open in this book that if people had made fun of it, it would have been devastating because but I see that, you know, the whole point about this book is sharing my experiences so that it can help people.
We were joined this hour by fashion designer and icon Dionne von Furstenberg. Thank you so much for talking with us today. Her new memoir is The Woman I Wanted to Be, and she also mentors aspiring designers on our reality TV show House of DBF, and she also has a coffee table book, Journey of a Dress. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.